All right, so you may remember a couple of weeks back, we were talking about addiction as a family disease. And our expert for that conversation, addictions counsellor Guy Duplessis, spoke about how very often family members actually contribute to someone's addiction by enabling. In our wellness feature this morning, we're zoning in on the often linked behaviours of enabling and codependency. And to help us do that, we're joined by Mandy Johnson. Mandy is a mindfulness-based coach and facilitator, and herself is in recovery from codependency. A very good morning to you, Mandy. Lovely to have you with us.
Morning, and morning to all the listeners. Lovely to be here.
Mandy, just remind us, what do we mean when we say enabling? What is it?
So enabling is actually one of the behaviours that codependents use, and it's probably one of the most harmful. So enabling would be perhaps instead of supportive. So there's a difference between enabling and being supportive. An enabler might not even know that they're doing something that is harmful or unhealthy to the other or the person in their lives. So taking responsibility for a loved one's actions, for example, is enabling, or covering things up or lying to protect their loved one from consequences or poor choices, trying to solve their loved one's problems, maybe financially, legally, interpersonally, that sort of behaviour.
So when we were speaking, that the context that we were speaking about this on the show a few weeks ago was in the context of addiction. But it's not just people who are codependent aren't only in relationships with addicts, and enabling doesn't only happen in that dynamic, does it?
No, I mean, in the love relationship, there's also enabling in that people rescue each other's emotional needs. So there's a very big difference between a healthy and a codependent or dysfunctional relationship. Those two things especially in a dysfunctional relationship, there's a loss of inner intimacy. So the person completely relies on the other for a sense of self. So that relationship becomes addictive and toxic.
Where does this all come from, Mandy? Like when we look at people who are codependent, who are they? What are some of the issues perhaps that they are dealing with in their life? Can you often look at somebody who is now displaying codependent behaviour and in terms of their relationships, and you look back and you go, oh yes, some textbook stuff there regarding sort of family of origin, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. So could we start off with just a basic definition of what codependency is?
I'd love to, yes.
Yeah, because it's sort of misunderstood, and it's characterized by a huge amount of denial. So many people don't know, denial being one of the defense mechanisms that they use. So a set of maladaptive compulsive behaviors learned by the family members as coping mechanisms in a response to emotional pain. So absolutely, the family of origin is the first core dynamic of where this comes from. So in the family dynamic, there would be things like rejection, rigidity, so that's high expectations, lots of control, criticism, there's overprotection, premature responsibility in that family of origin, sort of a family of origin where you don't talk about feelings. Only good feelings are acceptable, lots of secrets, lots of shoulds, and there's a lot of fear and rigidity in the family of origin. Physical, sexual, emotional abuse. So out of that, there would be this wounding of your true self. So if you have to choose between authenticity and attachment, as a child, you're always going to choose attachment. So your authentic self goes into hiding. And that's why in a codependent relationship, if there's no sense of self, if you've lost that sense of self, you'll do almost anything to be loved. So there's a very real weak sense of yourself, a lot of self-criticism, and then you need to be needed in order to be loved. So you'll do lots of compulsive behaviors, lots of obsessive thinking in codependence.
I would imagine, Mandy, that often people who find themselves in codependent relationships are aware that they are almost selling themselves down the river. And as you spoke about this compulsive behaviour, they're not necessarily doing this out of choice. It is almost a base human reaction. That it is something inherent that this learned behaviour, as you say, that compels them to behave in ways that perhaps they even know are bad for them, but they just can't stop.
Absolutely. It is an addiction. It's a process addiction because it's happening inside of ourselves. And you're right, the denial is the defense mechanism, but people are aware that something is going on. Sometimes, you know, codependent behavior occurs in the guise of caring or loving, so this need to care and love to the degree that you lose yourself in it. So you're right, it's a survival mechanism and a coping mechanism. And it's developed to alleviate that emotional pain. Remember, the pain of the codependent is a deep emptiness, a sense of I'm a failure, I'm unworthy, I can't be loved. Unless I do something for others, I'm unworthy of love. So it's always in the doing. People are in the doing mode. A codependent struggle to just be and to accept the flow of life. They're constantly doing.
So what I'm hearing from you then, Mandy, and I should just say, if you just tuned in this morning, we are talking to Mandy Johnson about codependency. And Mandy is a mindfulness-based coach and facilitator, and herself is in recovery from codependency. And that's what we're talking about this morning, codependency and the sort of linked behaviour of enabling, which we first spoke about on the show a few weeks back in the context of addiction as a family disease and the role that enabling family members have to play in that. So what I'm hearing you say essentially, Mandy, is that for codependence, it is a thing of I am helping in order that you fill that hole in the soul for me. It is I want to do this for you so that a need for me gets met. The nicer I am to you, the more I help you, the more I love you, the more I demonstrate my total and unadulterated devotion for you, I will get something back. Am I on the right track?
Absolutely. So the red flags for codependency, the need to be needed in order to be loved, which you've so beautifully described there, would be things like focusing on others' needs, completely needless and wantless yourself. So you neglect your own health, well-being, emotional health, and financial health too. Codependents get into financial difficulties. Real struggle with boundaries and the inability to say no. So you'll say yes when you mean no. So sometimes I say in codependency, vulnerability is death. So the inability to ask to meet your own needs. Does that kind of help a little bit?
Yeah,
in terms of what you just described?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, maybe you've answered this question already, but what is the payoff? What's the payoff for a codependent person who is enabling, who enables another person? Because very often, because one would imagine that if the codependent person got their needs met, they wouldn't need to continue enabling. So is it true, therefore, that often codependent people will inadvertently or advertently end up with people who simply are unable to meet their needs? And so you end up in a bit of a vicious cycle in that I'm enabling. I'm waiting for the payoff. It's not coming. It's never coming because I'm seeking out, in the words of the song, I'm seeking out love in all the wrong places.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. It's a cycle that continues and continues. So remember, in codependency, the true self, your authentic self, has gone into hiding. And there's kind of this pseudo self running the show. So this masked person who is living in one of the first patterns of codependency is denial. So difficulty identifying what they are even feeling, or they minimize or alter or deny what they truly feel. And remember the payoff you were talking about. I perceive myself as completely unselfish, dedicated to the well-being of others. The payoff is I am acknowledged, I am seen, I am loved for what I do, not who I am, because I don't know who I am.
Sure.
The pseudo-self is kind of running my life, and the pseudo-self says I need to be a compulsive caretaker, a martyr, I control others, I people please, I approval seek. These are the behaviors, unfortunately, and then, as you said, the one that the show was sort of based on, enabling of others' behavior. And after a while, you know, people that are codependent are so exhausted that they just feel a sense of tiredness and apathy. So they just continue enabling, or they do it out of complete fear that the other might die, or a child who's addicted might, you know, without my enabling and controlling, they might not survive it, you know. So you live in that it's really quite a impoverished and empty way of life, you know, but it is a process addiction because the emotional hole inside of the codependent just grows bigger and bigger as they exhaust themselves.
I would imagine also what comes with that over time, if yeah. your need yeah. is not being met, if you are not being seen, and if you have staged yourself as this person who is so selfless because you are constantly enabling, you're constantly giving. When your need is not met, when that is not, there's no reciprocity, I would imagine you then become quite resentful.
Resentment for a person living in recovery is the same as almost relapsing. So resentment is something we need to work with as codependents immediately to acknowledge the resentment and to start communicating authentically. So an antidote to codependency is practicing authenticity. So cultivating enough courage to be emotionally honest and set boundaries and say no when you mean no. Allow yourself to be vulnerable. And that is where mindfulness is such a beautiful practice because, I mean, the bedrock of mindfulness is really living with compassion and wholeheartedness. So that's the ability to know yourself in a graceful, joyful, appreciative way and then ask your partner or the people around you to meet your needs instead of, you know, living in that kind of I'm fine. You know, and fine, we giggle sometimes when I work with clients. Fine stands for freaked out, insecure, neurotic and emotional.
I'm glad that you I'm glad you changed the F for 7:47 in the morning. Appreciate that, Mandy.
Exactly. So we don't use the word fine and okay is a little shop down the road. But so codependents really minimize what they're truly feeling because they feel that if they had to ask to have their needs met, they probably wouldn't, and they don't want to be vulnerable. But that's the start of healing, you know, that's the start of recovery. Ask for what you need authentically.
So let's talk about recovery. And just again, if you're just tuned in, we're talking to Mandy Johnson, who's a mindfulness-based coach and facilitator, and herself is in recovery from codependency. And that's the topic of our wellness conversation this morning, codependency and the sort of linked behaviour of enabling. Let's talk about what recovery looks like then for somebody who is codependent, because I would imagine then we spoke about you and you mentioned the how dire resentments are for somebody who is in recovery from codependency. I would imagine that it all kind of starts coming full circle. If you enter into recovery, you learn how to put in boundaries, which means you are not doing that enabling behavior, which means that when you're need your codependent needs don't get met, you don't have that resentment because you've put in a boundary, and therefore you are sort of on the path to healing, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. So recovery, it's really important to remember that recovery is a process. So
not
I've
a
been
destination,
in recovery,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. not a once-off event. You know,
right.
You're not going to do like let me do the 12 steps. Just hand them to me and let's quickly get through them, you know, which is kind of me in my early recovery. Let's do this.
Yes, yep.
Type A personality, let's do recovery. It's a process. So, you know, I've been in recovery for, I think, nearly 17 years from codependency, and I can still notice enabling behaviors. I can still notice that need to compulsively do, obsessively think, awfulize, catastrophize, live too much in the past, or future. So recovery is identify your own needs. That's number one. Set those functional boundaries and live honestly, trusting the flow of life. And there's also a process of grieving losses because codependents have a lot of grief that they need to work through, not only from family of origin, but because they have so much in their relationships denied their own needs and their own being. You need to deal with that emotional pain and you need to learn how to assertively communicate. So ask to, you know, many codependents are extremely passive aggressive in that they can't ask for what they need. So they do it in ways that are maladaptive. And then most importantly is dealing with guilt and shame. Codependents live in this way of their primary fear is being abandoned. So they have shamed themselves in the way that they've behaved, and they need to work through that shame and guilt.
So that sort of speaks to what I said earlier about you throw yourself under the bus, and that's where the shame comes from. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, that is in so many different ways where, you know, you've really lost yourself in that relationship of intensity, because codependents are addicted to fear and intensity. And when they drop into, especially in mindfulness, a lot of that shame, guilt, those core emotions arise. So mindfulness needs to be trauma-informed when you're working with addiction and codependency. You need to be mindful of trauma and complex trauma with codependence.
I wonder if, I'm wondering if there's people listening in now who may have heard the term codependency but didn't realise that actually it is an addiction. It's a process addiction, because so often when we use the term addiction, people imagine, you know, an alcohol addiction, something that seems very tangible. Okay, you know, heroin addiction, needle in the arm. It's very visual. Even another process addiction, like, for example, an eating disorder, it can be a very visual thing. Whereas codependency sort of sneaks under the covers, doesn't it? You can be operating quite functionally in life, but be utterly, utterly miserable as a codependent living with this addiction, unable to hold down and have healthy relationships. One of the things that you mentioned that I think was really interesting was about boundaries and how people who are codependent are completely unboundaried. And again, I guess that would come to family of origin stuff. If you've never seen what a boundary looks like, why would you suddenly start in your adult relationships putting it into play because you don't know how to? A boundary is for who, Mandy? When we talk about you must put in boundaries, and it's become a bit of a buzzword too. Oh, no, they don't have any boundaries, or I'm putting in a boundary. What does it mean, and who is the boundary for?
Brilliant question. I would say, you know, when you were talking about it's a difficult thing to understand as an addiction, because it starts with a process addiction. So when I'm working with clients in recovery, I say let's start with internal boundaries first, because the codependent has, remember I said, compulsive behaviors, compulsive doing, obsessive thinking. So they personalize everything. They interpret everything that is said and done in the immediate environment, they perceive as directed at them. And that's very threatening internally, because if people see my true self, that I'm vulnerable and needing and wanting, they will not love me. Or they're obsessive, overanalyze everything. It goes around and around, huge amounts of anxiety and fear inside, and catastrophizing. So start with working with the thinking, which mindfulness is useful for, and the compulsive doing, the compulsive caretaking, boundaries around that. Don't do for others what they can do for themselves. Allow people to grow and be their own person. So we need to almost really work with that compulsive controlling of others. Because remember, codependents think that they believe that other people are incapable of taking care of themselves. There's kind of that, there's a lack of humility in codependents, because part of their identity is prideful, is that you need me to do this for you. And then it sets up this toxic cycle of learned helplessness in maybe their adult children or their partners, because they need them to depend on them. It's part of the addictive process.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. It really is absolutely fascinating stuff. Recovery is possible, isn't it? You are testament to that yourself, 17 years in recovery from codependency.
Recovery is possible. In fact, it's an incredible process, and you learn to have a loving, kind relationship with yourself, because you learn to know who you truly are, and you discover things. For example, I used to think that I was an extroverted sort of social person, because that was one of the masks that I used, and discovered that I'm actually quite introverted and creative and a quiet person. And you know, then when you're in active addiction, when I'm talking about process addiction, you know, the need to be social and get out there and to, as we call it, pulsating type A personalities. And when you discover that actually there's a huge part of your world that is there needs to be quiet, nature. It's really lovely to get to know yourself, because you don't spend your time exhausting yourself in all these other ways. So recovery is, as I say, a process, not an event, and it's learning to reconnect with your authentic self, the one that went into hiding as a child, for whatever reason.
Fascinating stuff. Mandy, thank you so much for your time this morning. You've really unpacked
a lot
for us and given us so much food for thought, certainly. Mandy Johnson is a mindfulness-based coach and facilitator, and as we've heard, is herself 17 years in recovery from codependency. An absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Mandy. Hope you'll join us again soon.